Let's go to Genesis 45. And so we have been making our way through the end of the book of Genesis, looking at the life of Joseph and his brothers, as well as Jacob. Last week, we dealt with chapters 43 and 44. And in that text, you remember, we end in verse... So, at the very end of chapter 44, you have Benjamin with the silver cup. He's brought. They come back to Joseph's home. Of course, the brothers don't know what's going on. Who steps up on behalf of Benjamin? Judah. Thank you. Now, what's important about noticing it's Judah? From just the book of Genesis standpoint, I know there's greater implication with Jesus, but just from the book of Genesis, why is it significant that it was Judah that stepped up in this moment? Yes, ma'am.
Because wasn't it Judah who was like, let's sell him off to slavery?
Yes. In chapter 37, it was Judah the one that said, why should we not get a prophet? Why should we kill him and get no prophet? Let's sell him. And that's ultimately what they do. And so you have seen an arc in the character of Judah change, right? He's not the same person he was in chapter 37. And so Joseph has really put his brothers to the test, okay? So verse 34 of chapter 44, this is the final statement of Judah. For how can I go back to my father if the boy, Benjamin, is not with me? I fear to see the evil that would find my father. Now, obviously, he's not talking about the greater sense of evil. Does anybody have a different translation of 34 instead of evil, a different word?
Misery.
Anybody different than that? Misery, evil? Okay, so those seem to be the words used there. So when you look at the life of Jacob and the things he's been through emotionally, he's had to deal with a lot. And so Judah is seemingly to take care for his father that he did not used to do. Right? And so that's changed. And so that's how chapter 44 ends. Let's go to 45. It's at this point, and it seems to be a highly emotional moment. Just think about what Judah just said. And so how does chapter 45 begin? The text in the English Standard reads, "Then Joseph could not control himself before all those who stood by him. He cried, 'Make everyone go out from me.' So no one stayed with him when Joseph made himself known to his brothers." So he sends out everybody other than his brothers out of the room. When you're having a difficult time, sometimes you just want those closest to you there. You're not trying to share this with everybody. And so this is going to be a very private moment. Up until this moment, how have the brothers seen Joseph? Ruler? Egyptian? Stranger? Judge, right? All those kind of ideals there. Much less emotional because he has cried before, but what did he do that time? He went out to a different room, right? So this is the first time they've seen him break down. Not that it's not happened, because it has. So it says in verse 2, he wept aloud so that the Egyptians heard it and the household of Pharaoh heard it. That's a cry, right? You have probably impactful memories. One of mine from my grandmother, my mom's mom, is when her husband passed away, my great-grandfather. And hearing her cry at the funeral home as we were doing visitation, I can still vividly go right back there in my mind if I start thinking about it. You think about Joseph in this moment. All of this that's been built up for how many years? 23 years, all this time, all this buildup, and it just floods out. And so he wept aloud, so loud that those in the facility, in the home, could hear it. Joseph said to his brothers, "I am Joseph." Big moment in Star Wars, right? What does Darth Vader say to Luke? And actually, that's not in the movie. Everybody remembers that. You go back and look at the lines. It's not actually what he says. But he says something very similar to that. This is a moment. Can you imagine all they've been through? And then he says, "I am Joseph." And then he asks a question he's already asked before. "Is my father still alive?" But his brothers could not answer him, for they were dismayed at his presence. Now, if you're those brothers, what's going through your mind in that moment? How are you feeling? It's about the hammers coming down. Maybe that's it. The dream. What had we noticed previously about the brothers with Benjamin and how they reflect now back on Joseph? Their reflections have changed, haven't they, on that moment? How have they changed? Go ahead. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true. But just thinking about Joseph and what they did to Joseph, how has that changed? What? The guilt has finally come on them. And we heard that because they said at one point, "We deserve this because of what we did to him." Now, you remember back, all the way back in chapter 37, when all that happens, do they show any signs of guilt? One of the most amazing things is they go into their father and they try to comfort him. While their father thinks an animal has killed him, they never once say, "Hey, Dad, none of that was true." And so there's probably a lot going through their mind. Now, the Bible doesn't describe all that for us, but we have seen them change and we've seen them experience this guilt. You think about David in 2 Samuel chapter 13, after the sin with Bathsheba, right, chapters 12 and 13. Chapter 11 is the sin, and then who comes to him? Who? Nathan. Nathan the prophet comes to him. Remember, he describes that parable of the man who has the lamb, and David's listening, and he's all attentive. Has David, to that moment, felt any sin or shown any sign of guilt? No signs. What does he say when the parable is finished? Huh? "Kill the man." Right? He's very judgmental. He's ready to condemn that man. But then you have that moment when Nathan says to him, "You are the man." One of the most powerful moments in all of Scripture to me. Reading that every time, it kind of gives me chills because I'm trying to think like David and kind of get in where he's at in that moment. And like to hear those words, "You are the man." And then David changes, right? Everything about David changes. In that moment, he meets God and he owns his sin. How do we see David change? Do you remember what are the ways we see him change after that? He's very repentant.
Instead of saying, "It was her fault, she had no business up there."
Mm-hmm.
On the roof, baby.
Yeah, he's not blaming anybody else but himself. You can go and read some of his writings, like Psalm 51, and he describes, he lays out his heart. All right, and so you see change. Change is possible, even to people who are hardened. Change is possible. But it takes what? It takes confronting. It takes a confrontation of some way of them confronting what they've done and opening themselves up to that hurt. Miss Lynn, and then, or go ahead.
Saul, if you look at Saul's sin, Saul never took ownership of his sin. He blamed the people, he blamed everybody but himself. He never did ever acknowledge.
And that's why you never see any real spiritual growth from him, do you, Miss Lynn?
He finally
has to, and that hurts. This is the thing I think we ought not to underestimate. That's painful. What David experienced was painful. What the brothers had to face was painful. Why do we deny our guilt? Because we don't want to deal with that. And so we shut it off, we isolate it. Those doors have to be opened. And so here back in chapter 45, the brothers come face to face with their past and their sin. And so it says they just could not answer him, right? They could not say a word. They're just so overwhelmed in the moment. Joseph's response, though, what a man of God he is. Like his character, and the character he displays in his willingness to forgive. Notice what he does. He says to them, "Come near to me, please." They came near, and he said, "I am your brother Joseph, whom you sold into Egypt." All right, so now you think, okay, here comes the tirade. That's what you did, right? So now let me give you a reaming right now. That's not what he does. And he says, now do not be distressed or angry with yourselves. I lost my place there. Angry with yourselves because you sold me here. For God sent me before you to preserve life. There's some important things. There's two issues I want to discuss in a little different way. We'll talk about the providence of God when we get to chapter 50, okay? And I'm going to hold that discussion off for just a little bit because then we can tie it all together. But there's two other aspects that I was rethinking about. I was like, I've never really thought about it from those two perspectives. Number one is forgiveness. And the difficulty and the power of forgiveness. And then on the other side, the outlook of Joseph and how do we adopt his outlook, how he sees the world differently than we may do. So let's think about forgiveness first. Go over in your Bibles, if you will, to Matthew chapter 6. So again, we looked at chapter 7 this morning with the Sermon on the Mount. And how Jesus ends that text. Then you get, but if you go back just a little bit earlier, right in the middle, he's talking about prayer. I love Jody's discussion about prayer this morning. You have my mind really thinking a lot about that today. And there's a lot of different aspects. I want to pick out one thing that Jesus mentions about prayer that's significant for us to keep in mind. Let's go. So, verse 12. Verse 12. When Jesus is teaching his disciples, this is the manner in which you should pray. What's the thing he mentions in verse 12?
We gotta forgive others.
There's a little bit more to it than right. Think about it a little bit deeper there. That is true. It is about forgiving others, but he goes a little bit deeper. What does he add to it? All right, while you think about it, hold on, we're not done. Let's go down to verse 14. So I want you to take verse 12, and then I want you to add verse 14 to it. Somebody read 14 and 15. Very powerful two-letter word used in that text. What is it in English? If. What is if? It's a condition, a stated condition, one based on the other. What's the condition in 12 and 14 and 15? This is powerful, and it's different than what the world teaches. Okay, you're going down the right way. My challenge would be don't just repeat what the text says. Take the text and what are we to take out of it?
We should be forgiving when we're wrong.
Okay, that's one element of it. We should be forgiving.
Is it that?
But let's go just a little bit further into that. What about our relationship with God and what Aaliyah said?
So basically, if God forgives us, we have to forgive other people?
Okay, you're barking up the right tree. Just keep going with that thought.
Forgiving man comes first.
Yes. Our willingness to forgive is a prerequisite, thank you. Prerequisite to our forgiveness. He says if we don't do that, we're not going to be forgiven by Him. It is not just a good thing to do, but it is required of God to have a spirit of forgiveness. You think about, go ahead.
You know, kind of the treat of the treated well, it's the same thing for forgiveness. If you want to be forgiven, you need to be forgiving.
Absolutely. So what happens then if you and I are unwilling to forgive and we hold on to old grudges? We won't be forgiven. If what Jesus is saying is true, that's the deal. If we hold on to old hatreds, we're in trouble. He says it's a condition of forgiveness, is our willingness to forgive those we encounter. You remember the parable of the man who's forgiven a little bit of debt and then goes out, or a large amount of debt, and he goes out and finds his coworker, and he grabs him by the neck and he says, "You're going to pay me everything?" Who owed him just a little bit of money? Right? What's the point of that? That's evil. That's the point of it. That's evil, and that's anti-God. This ideal forgiveness. Now, going back to Genesis 44 for just a minute. 45, I'm sorry. How do we see forgiveness in Joseph? Well, there's
brothers, and they're trying to hide, basically not only forgive them, but then trying to kind of nurture them, if you will.
He's trying to bring them along, right?
Joseph didn't require his brother, and then again he may have required his brothers to ask for forgiveness from him. He would just...
They never have asked for forgiveness, have they? See, this is where I disagree with some people on. I think we can forgive people whether they ask for it or not. I just don't hold to the thing that you have to wait for somebody to ask for forgiveness to forgive them. I think we can forgive people who've never asked for it in their entire life, our life. I think it's wrong for us to hold on to that. I think what is incumbent on us is to be a forgiving people. Now, that's, of course, not to say we let people abuse us. Right? Somebody's mean to us all the time. We don't have to keep hanging out with them, right? We don't have to keep letting them harm us. But I think holding on to grudges is a dangerous thing. Joseph, such a powerful example of that, isn't he? His brothers never ask for forgiveness. Now, later in chapter 50, they kind of do, don't they? They come, they kind of grovel at him, again, because they're worried because their father's died, at what he's going to do to them. But he was ready to forgive. That's the first thing. The second thing I think that's important here. Were you going to say something?
Well, I was going to read verse 5. But
go ahead.
Now therefore, be not grieved nor angry with yourselves that ye sold me hither. For God did send me before you to preserve life.
Yeah, so and later, and we're going to come back at this kind of hard about the whole providence of God with the life of Joseph, because that's evident here. The other thing, though, I want to think about, at least for this evening, I'm sorry, I'm only going to get through five verses, but I'll cover the rest next week. We'll finish Genesis next week, I promise. Well, I better not promise. I mean, we talked about Japheth's vow. I don't want to make a vow that I can't fulfill. Right, I won't burn any daughters. But my goal is to finish it next week. But with this, the other thing is the outlook of Joseph. How is his perspective on life different than so many in the world?
He can see the bigger picture.
Okay. Anybody want to piggyback off of that? That's the right direction. So she's saying that he's able to focus on the bigger picture of God rather than the, and you tell me if I'm misquoting in any way, rather than the minuscule things that happen day to day, right? His life has not been rosy all the time. Now, right now, things are going pretty well. God has lifted him up. He has a high position in Egypt. It hasn't always been that way. He's been treated very unjustly in his life. Yet, he's not bitter. He doesn't hold a grudge.
He's got peace about
it. He's got peace. And he sees things from a different perspective than many in the world do. Negative things happen to us. We have a health problem. What do? We want to internalize it and talk about, woe is me, I'm just, why is this happening? Why is life so bad to me? When what he is looking at is not what is happening to him, but what is God doing through him? Do we ever in our lives choose, and this is a challenge for me as well, and I think all of us, maybe what we should be asking is, what might God be doing now through me? Through the negative things that are happening to me. How could God take this negative and make something very positive come out of it? That's just a different outlook. That the world will not understand. That they won't appreciate, they won't applaud. But I think as Christians, I think that's our challenge. It's to see things from a macro level God view than a minuscule day-to-day view. That's not challenging when things are going well, right? When we're happy, you know, it's great. Thank you, God. You bless me, right? I hope we're saying that when we get blessed, but the challenge is when things are hard and when Satan wants us to internalize and to look at, woe is me, why is this happening to me again? Trying to keep that kind of attitude, I think, is one of real faith and trust in God. Joseph, wonderful, wonderful man of God. We'll come back. We'll finish up 45. We'll continue on there. We're not going to go verse by verse. I do encourage you this week, please read 45 through 50. It'll help as we think through these things. Next week, we're going to focus in on some of the big highlights as you finish, especially at the providence of God. We'll talk about that and then some of the other things happening around it. Any other questions or comments? All right. Before we close out, let me just ask